Welcome to Becoming Soul, it's Entertainment Talk's podcast for Better Call Soul on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host Matthew, joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
Doing very well, thanks.
Good. This is for Season 6, Episode 13, Soul Gone. It's the series finale, the final episode. We know everything now, all the answers that we had, all the questions that we had have now been answered, because we've got no more episodes. David, what do you think, first of all, of the actual episode itself, the series finale?
Different, I think, to the Breaking Bad one, but that's absolutely fine. There's no issue with that at all. I thought it was really well put together. There's a lot of callbacks in there. There's a lot of mirroring in there as well, too, rather than straight just sort of, you know, callbacks to older characters and other events. In the way it's actually visually shot, there is a lot of mirroring in certain shots as well to earlier episodes and sort of to the start, and I thought that was beautifully done. It's one of the things that both Breaking Bad and, you know, the cinematography on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul have been astounding throughout, so that I thought was brilliant. I think it ended in a interesting and somewhat unexpected way. It was very difficult to tell exactly where you were going to land. You know, would it have made sense if Jimmy had sort of got away with it in some ways, or was he inevitably going to have to be locked up? What, you know, I think given the overall sort of theme of the show, that the sort of actions have consequences, I don't think there was any other way you could have ended it. It would have been weird if he got away with it. So I really liked it, and sort of some unexpected cameos popping up in there. I really liked it. I thought it was a good solid, well-rounded end to the entire thing.
I love this episode. I thought it was incredible. And again, it's interesting when you've got a show that, I know I've said this before, but the same point still stands, a show that doesn't have, well, sometimes it has shootouts, but these types of episodes, these sort of last few episodes, they don't have shootouts, they don't have superheroes, they don't have Transformers, they don't have car chases. It's all just dialogue and really just very, very, not even just incredible acting, but very detailed acting down to sort of, because I agreed with something that Alan Sepinwall said in one of his reviews, which is that how, you know, that the slightest little facial changes from these actors and what that all means, like the detail of that sort of stuff. It's almost like you know, as we've got like further in with technology and video games, and like mocap stuff has gotten better to the point where like, they do the dots on the face and stuff, and the facial features stuff really sticks out. It's almost like reading it like that, like sort of facial feature changes and things like that. So, it's really quite detailed and incredible with how that's done. I think if you put these shows as a package, so Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, El Camino, El Camino is technically like a TV film, isn't it? So if we count all of it as like a TV package, I think this is the best TV sort of franchise package out there. There's still other shows I think are fantastic, and I still don't think Better Call Saul is as good as like other shows, but if you look at this as a big kind of franchise overall, obviously you've got Breaking Bad that's the supporting part. That's not to put Better Call Saul down, it's just to say that this is an extension of that, and it's a part of the whole bigger picture. It's the best written franchise on television. And I know I keep going on about writing and how good that is, but when you haven't kind of got other things to lean on, like, oh, look at the big flashy action set piece, or oh, look at like the timey-wimey stuff, or that sort of thing. A lot of what they're actually doing here comes down to acting and writing and timing and facial expressions and like layered characters, because goodness me, the amount of depth that these characters end up with, and the amount of grey area things that we've got going on throughout the whole franchise. I mean, there's grey area questions about so many characters, and it's just truly incredible what they've put together here. So yeah, but in terms of like the actual ending and stuff, I finished the episode and I did have like a small question I asked you about something, and that kind of I thought that was maybe where it was, but just for transparency, I suppose. The only thing I was like ever slightly so confused on was, she says you got 7.5 years, and then she says like, oh, 84, and I was just slightly confused as to where that sort of landed, and then I looked around a little bit, and then within a few seconds I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, but that's not like a, that was a me problem, not the show problem. So
yeah,
it's not a knock against the show's writing, but it ended in a place where I was like, okay, I'm good with that. Again, maybe I would have made different choices here and there, but again, it's not my story to tell. But the story that was told to me, I am happy with. Also, to touch on a point that you made just then, I'm happy that this wasn't kind of an ending copy and paste of Breaking Bad. Like, we had mm-hmm. characters ending up in different situations, which we can get to a bit later. But as you sort of realise where things might be going, because even until the last 5 minutes, I was still like, maybe it might be a twist here, because it feels like the show wanted me to think, in sort of a false way, which is okay, that like, oh, there might be a change, something might creep up, new information might creep up, because a lot of this episode is about sort of what information is going for or against these two people in their cases. So I thought like, oh, is there going to be like twists and turns last 2 minutes, but I really, really like where it ended up. So and overall, as a end of a kind of franchise, I suppose I'm satisfied. There's still like little ideas here and there that I'd like them to do, but that is kind of me being, I don't know if greedy is the right word, but just I've enjoyed so much of what we got out of the franchise that I'm looking for those small holes in the story as to like, oh, could you tell this story with it, like I mentioned with the Kim show mm-hmm. before. That's just me enjoying what I've got and suggesting ideas, but then that's not me being annoyed that we're not potentially getting more, because I'm very happy with what we've got. So just on the last point I've just mentioned, where do you kind of stand with wanting more or being happy with what we've got, etc.?
I'm kind of at the point where, yeah, there is possibly a story you could maybe tell with Kim, but I don't know, because if you were going to tell a story with Kim, it would sort of be after everybody else's, you kind of have to set it with Jimmy in prison and her life moving forward, I think, if you were going to do that. And then at that point, it's so disconnected from everything else. You sort of want her to have a good life at this point. It's a bit like why you don't go back to Jesse. You know, Jesse got out in El Camino. Jesse escaped. You sort of don't want to go back to that character and find that, because if you're going to do that, you've got to tell some sort of story which drags them into something. And I kind of want the characters to be okay now. You know, the ones that got away, the ones that got out, Jesse and Kim. I kind of want them to have a good life, so I sort of don't want them to go back. I'm happy if they leave it here now. I think they've produced two of the highest quality, best dramas ever made for TV, and I am at the point where I think don't go back and tread over those again. There is no real need to add more to those stories right now. I'm kind of interested to see what they do next, mm-hmm. more than anything else, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. Yep. All right, our sponsor at the moment is Manscaped. Of course, you can go and get various different men's grooming products from them, because that's what they sell. And good news, lots of good news, you don't have to type in anything to begin with. You can simply click on the link in the show notes to go over to Manscaped's website to start having a browse, start having a look. Of course, they've got different razors, shavers, ears and nose hair trimmers, cloves, different deodorants, and, things like that. You can also get different sets of things. So if you want, well, a bunch of different kind of things, they have different sets of those as well, so not just individual items. All very well made, very first-hand, professional, all that type of stuff. No question about the quality. Even the box that the thing comes in is really good. So that's really, really good stuff as well. So yeah, once you have a browse of their stuff, maybe it's to treat yourself, somebody else, whatever the occasion, maybe both, who knows. So yeah, once you go over to Manscaped's website and you select what you want from their website, once you get to the checkout point, you can simply type in the promo code box, ETALKUK, that's ETALK UK, to get 20% off your order and free shipping with Manscaped. So that's some good stuff there. And rather than scrolling all the way back through the podcast and trying to find where I said the promo code, it's written in the show notes, so you can either write it off of there or copy and paste it, whatever you want to do, just a bit of convenience. So the information that you need, the promo code and the link for the website, is in your show notes, so just have a look for it there. But yeah, that's Manscaped stuff, really, really good stuff. You can go over to their website, have a look and see what they got. And yeah, good stuff with Manscaped. So thanks to Manscaped for sponsoring Entertainment Talks podcast, and of course thank you very much for listening. Now let's do some quick housekeeping and then we'll get into the last recap. We will have one more podcast, it'll be next week, it'll be a series wrap up, but let's discuss the finale first. Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, speaking of wrapping things up, maybe for good, maybe not, maybe there might be another season. Yesterday, me and David covered the season finale, or missed series finale. Season finale, season 4, episode 8 for Westworld, so that's that for now. We don't know if or when it's coming back, so we'll have to see what happens. Then I finally got out to seeing Jurassic World Dominion. I didn't enjoy it, unfortunately, for various different reasons, which you can hear me say on that very episode. It's a spoiler-free episode. But yes, that's my skip rating review. That's for Jurassic World Dominion, which is the end of the, let's say, trilogy, because the franchise is still too successful, so expect to see it back at some point. So that's good stuff. Over on some not-so-good stuff, Man United lost their second game in the Premier League start to this new season. 4-0 to Brentford, that was a score by halftime. I don't think Brentford needed to bother scoring any more goals after that. But we also played in lime green, which was really horrible. David, I'll send you a photo of the kit because you'll be shocked. I don't understand why, because our colours are red, white and black. And last year we played in like some blue kit. This year we got some green lime kit. So I don't know what the kit designers are doing. But I don't know what
merchandising. Merchandising is what they're doing.
But no one likes the colours. So, anyway, that's that. So that's United cast continued. Over on these, an update podcast that we did, House of the Dragon, which starts next week, doesn't it? And Tales of the Walking Dead, which, according to UK streaming services, doesn't exist. But that's for House of the Dragon and Tales of the Walking Dead, which is they're both new spin-offs for those franchises. I did an update podcast for those, basically discussing what we're going to be doing with the coverage of those. We're still going to cover them at some point. That's an update podcast for that. Also, we got Gaming Talk podcast for last week. Talked about Sony and Microsoft disagreeing on Call of Duty for various different reasons, and a fun Red Dead Online story, and a bunch of other things that we discussed. Also, lost the first game of the Premier League season, which was Man United losing 2-1 home to Brighton. So that's that one. Of course, the next game is on Monday against Liverpool. So we'll see how that one goes. Did a list called Top 5 Best YA Young Adult Shows. So that's that list. Again, the main characters of these shows have to fit within a certain age bracket so that they can be young adults. So that was a fun list to do. And that's everything we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Just a note, by the way, there'll be, what day is it today? Thursday. There'll be a important big kind of episode coming out tomorrow, which will be for August 19th, and I also potentially plan on seeing a film tomorrow, so look out for those reviews. And then Gaming Talk Sunday, Man United cast Monday, and then we'll continue things from there. But in the meantime, let's get to this finale recap. So it says here, Better Call Saul has rested its case after 6 glorious seasons. That's how I would describe it, certainly. And it made quite a closing statement. Monday series finale begins with a flashback. I was a bit confused when this flashback came up, but usually you're supposed to be confused. So, to season 5's Bagman episode, which we covered when that aired, with Jimmy and Mike trudging through the sweltering desert heat and finally finding a water tank to drink from. As they rest, Jimmy suggests that they run off with the $7 million they're carrying. This was the bail money for Lalo, wasn't it? If I remember correctly.
Yes, I think it was.
Yeah, so with the $7 million they're carrying and split it. Mike says, no, it's not ours. Mike's always the voice of reason. Jimmy says he'd take the money and build a time machine. Where would Mike time travel to, he asks. December 8th, 2001, he replies. First, presumably the day his son Matt was murdered. Then he changes his answer to March 17th, 1984. The day he took his first bribe, which led to Matt's death. So, you know, he's got some deeper thoughts on that. He'd also go forward in time and check on some people, see if they're doing okay, because that's the kind of thing that Mike does. Mm-hmm. As well, just like with Lalo's dad, checking to see if he's okay, that kind of thing. As for Jimmy, he'd go back to the day Warren Buffett took over Berkshire Hathaway and invest in it so he'd be filthy rich. And then, is that it? Money? Mike asks. Nothing you change? Jimmy walks off without answering. Again, it's just conversations, dialogue. There's no sort of like explosive things going on. And some people would maybe look at this as like, oh, it's just a filler sort of mic conversation just so we could be on screen. What I think the actual answer to this scene is, it gives, because you've got obviously three kind of personalities within Jimmy. You've got Jimmy, Gene, and Sol, and they all kind of offer different things and different points in his life. I think this kind of shows the, certainly the greed part of him, of just like, oh no, I wouldn't check on anybody, I wouldn't, you know, it's just, what could I invest in to get better, but to, you know, gain more money. But it fits with Jimmy, and I like this conversation for that so much, because even though Mike and, say, Jimmy or whatever, are on the same page about, like, some stuff, this is a very casual conversation. It's just a sort of, like, you know, have a chat while they have a rest. But it means something towards both characters. It really fits in with Mike and the type of person that he is. He's not as concerned with himself. He's more concerned about, like, you know, like I said, checking on other people or preventing people's deaths so that, you know, things would have been better. But Jimmy just mentions money. So I feel that this scene sets up the rest of the episode really, really well. And I sort of put this scene in the back of my mind and like sort of pinned it for the rest of the episode, because it tells you a bit of something about Jimmy himself, I think. So what did you think of the opening here?
Yeah, I think that is very much true. Both the flashbacks sort of are very much like showing that this has been his character throughout, you know. He's always been about the money. There is a greed there, and you know, Mike, although he is essentially a hitman the reason that Mike kind of got into it wasn't over greed, it wasn't over money, it was about protecting people. It was about, if I don't step into this, it's going to be much worse for the people involved, and I can do something to mitigate the damage. In most cases, that was it. And yeah, he's gone over board sometimes maybe with that, but there is a mark. Whereas with sort of Jimmy, there are morals there, but they're very fluid. So, and he's driven by, he wants to be rich. You know, he wants to be rich, he wants to be important, and yeah. And that, in both the flashback scenes, there is something that comes up from that. You know, that is, that slipping Jimmy persona has always been there, you know. So yeah, I mean, and it's always nice to see Mike on screen. I mean, Mike's one of my favorite characters from the show, I think.
Good old
so, yes, he's been brilliant in this, and yeah, I'm very happy to see, just, you know, for them to bring him back just for this is just great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff for the opening. Back in the Dune timeline, he flees on foot after Marion calls the cops with her life alert necklace. He goes home and grabs his secret shoebox, because of course he's got a secret shoebox, slipping out a window when he spots cops out front. He makes a run for it, ducking a helicopter overhead. He sort of goes under a bridge and hides inside of a dumpster. There's something to be said about that particular element of this. When he sees cops coming, he opens the shoebox and retrieves Ed the Disappearer's business card, trying to memorize the exact wording of the Hoover adapter, and then tries to open his diamond stash, but spills the, just drops everything all over this dumpster. The cops find him in the dumpster, and he sheepishly comes out, hands in the air. At the police station, he uses one call to phone a girl at the Cinnabon and tell her, "You're going to need a new manager." But while he's cursing himself in his cell, he spots a message scrawled on the wall: "My lawyer will ream your ass." He laughs hysterically, as I think most of us kind of did, and leaps to his feet, demanding another phone call. What's so interesting here, and again, it's like symbolism and kind of messages, and, you know, noting about where characters are and things like that. When you open the final episode of the show, and you have Jimmy talking about, you know, what would you do if you could essentially correct mistakes, and he says, "Gain more money," and then we flip forward to his future where he's in bad, you know, trouble. He's almost attempted, I think we could say, to kill Marion possibly, and ends up in a bin, basically. So you've gone from a man who is kind of greedy, kind of, you know, slipping Jimmy. He's got plans to, you know, get richer, and he ends up, granted, several years in the future, after everything's kind of really gone quite badly for him. You know, Kim's gone, and Chuck's dead, and Howard's dead, and tried to assault this woman, and or potentially assault this woman, and now he's ended up in a bin, and then he's just like, you know, he's a mess at that point. I think it's very interesting that, that's if there's one way to kind of describe a slipping Jimmy sort of thing, that's how you do it in an episode. You show an opening scene with a guy saying, I'd invest so I could get rich, and then the next scene ends up hiding from the police in a dumpster. I think that's how you do that. And you just look at the character in the dumpster and his, again, this is all, you know, Bob's acting and everything. Him, like, scrambling around for stuff or trying to memorize things and being, you know, in a dire, desperate situation. The police are right outside this dumpster, and he's, like, trying to fiddle about with stuff and all that. I think it's some interesting desperation for Jimmy, and it's interesting to see. What did you think of this scene?
Yeah, just interesting seeing Gene, you know, actually sort of panicking, and it was nice to see, you know, the fact that he got the business card thing out and was trying to memorize the words. There is an interesting, you know, I talked about the fact that there are mirroring things that went on throughout. There's I mean, this isn't the first time Jimmy's been through a dumpster. There was the time in, I think it was the episode Rico, he was looking around for Sandpiper documents. But one of the one of the ones that a number of people have pointed out was in the episode Wine and Roses, when you see the cleaning crew going through Saul's mansion and they dump a cardboard cutout of Saul, who's sticking out a sort of dumpster with his sort of hands up. And which sort of foreshadows this. So it's just little things like which is so cleverly placed throughout the whole. Really wonderful little bit of mirroring that's put in there. The back in the police station, the fact that he uses his one call to call the Cinnabon and go and sort of say, I won't be in, you know, and get the girl to do the rosters and say, you know, call management to tell them I don't need a new manager there and stuff. And then that realization that he could actually kind of maybe lawyer his way out of this situation. It's a really good scene. Yeah. This whole set of scenes.
Definitely. So after he demands this other call, he rings his old pal Bill Oakley. We saw the billboard, whatever it was, a few episodes ago. We wondered, because I was at the time like, why are you showing me that? Again, there's probably a reason you're showing me that. This is that reason. So good stuff again. He rings Bill, offering to make him his advisory counsel and basically acting like he's doing Bill a favor by hiring. It is like, you know, the opportunity. You've got the opportunity to be Saul Goodman's lawyer type thing. So, and then really interesting question. Where do you see this ending? Bill asks, which is a great line to give a character in a series finale. And Gene answers, with me on top, like always. Again, it's that Saul Goodman stuff slipping in, isn't it? So Bill accompanies Gene to a meeting with the feds, with Hank's widow Marie watching initially through like a gate or something. They sort of walk past her to begin with, where they inform him he's facing an avalanche of charges from conspiracy to traffic narcotics to accessory to murder, you know, just a couple of things, adding up to life in prison plus 190 years, so you're never getting out. They offer him 30 years if he'll plead guilty, so 30 years, I think the good behaviour offer, wasn't it? So, and Marie, who comes in, tells him how much damage he caused and how noble Hank and Gomez were, if we remember the cop buddies from Breaking Bad, which we have seen in this show. It's just been a while. So, you helped the two-faced poisonous bastard behind it all. So Heisenberg, for what? Money? You did it all for money. Gene tries to offer his condolences for Hank, adding, "You and he are the victims, and so am I." And he goes into a whole thing after this. I had a thing in the back of my mind of like, okay, you might show Jesse, you might show Walter, you know, some fun cameo stuff, you might show some other people. Obviously there's certain characters you can't show because they're dead, such as Hank at this point. I never expected to see Marie again. She was kind of not because like dislike of the character or anything, I was just sort of thinking of like characters that could show up for different reasons. But again, this isn't just cameo for cameo's sake. This is getting into like Hank and what happened with Heisenberg and all that stuff, which is kind of the main thrust of the whole creation of, you know, the franchise. Because it's interesting initially, it's like, oh, Marie's on the other side of the gate. That was cool to see her. And then, no, she's like full on in this meeting and giving, you know, full dialogue and stuff like that. So I do feel that, because we were kind of a bit, then the thing, the general consensus, like after Breaking Bad, was okay, like phenomenal show and everything. Marie's character wasn't quite as great, like not terrible, but just they just didn't really give her as many interesting things to do. I feel like this was a good, I don't know if I'd call it redemption, but a good sort of like, let's bring her back for a little something and just kind of, just kind of cap that off a little bit. Because with Skyler, I didn't feel like I necessarily needed that. Like, you had the whole Skyler and Walt scene at the end of Breaking Bad. That was a great sort of cap off to that. And I think you had a similar one with Flynn or Walt Jr. Near the end of Breaking Bad. But because even after Hank dies and everything in Breaking Bad, you don't see Marie again. So this was kind of, again, this wasn't something I was thinking of, not something I was asking for. But I'm glad I got it. It's funny with the show because it sometimes it sometimes gives you things that you didn't know that you wanted, or or didn't know that you would think would work. But again, we're not Vince or Peter, so we don't come up with this stuff. But yeah, a nice surprising appearance from Marie ties all this really well together, and I thought this was a great scene. Again, all in black and white, because obviously it's Jean stuff. So yeah, what did you think of seeing Marie again and everything else?
Yeah, I was quite surprised as well that it was a pleasant. I do agree. I think it was a nice way of bringing her back, because, as we've said before, you know, she was one of the more underserved characters in the original show, and they seem to be unsure what to do with her at points. You know, if you're going to put any criticism on Breaking Bad, it would be that the Marie storyline was sort of didn't really work as well as everything else in the show. But yeah, so I think it was great to see her come back here, and we got some little bits of information out of that as well, which was the fact that we actually found out that they had actually recovered the bodies of both Gomez and Hank, because they were buried in a desert somewhere. So, you know, we now know that at least they found them wherever they were.
Yeah, they're in that desert last time we saw them. They got shot, and then we never saw them again. So,
yes, so we at least know that the bodies were recovered, because you know, they knew that, otherwise Marie wouldn't have like known that where they were. So that at least is some form of closure there. But it was good to see her back, and it makes sense as part of the story that, you know, when that was one of the major charges, was the fact that he was, you know, whilst he pulled the trigger himself necessarily, he was involved in the deaths of those guys, and so it sort of makes sense that she would be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did you think of, like, the way, I'm going to say Saul, because it's kind of Saul at this point in this episode, sort of slips back into that. The way he talks to Bill about, like, because he essentially presents it to him as like, oh, you'll get an opportunity to represent, you know, Saul Goodman.
I mean, that was pure Saul, the whole thing. Yeah. The whole sort of selling thing to him, it was like, this is a career-making case, you know, you just think of it, you'll be able to, this is... You'd be stupid to turn it down, you know, kind of making this offer. It was pure soul manipulation, that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good stuff. Gene, in the same room, launches into a sub-story about how he was kidnapped by Walter White and threatened at gunpoint, which is true, insisting he only acted as his lawyer because he feared for his life. You are looking at a man who lost everything, he pleads. I have nobody, I have nothing. Also true. The federal prosecutor scoffs and says, you think jurors are going to buy that? Gene smiles. I think he's sold at this point. All I need is one. He reminds them juries can be fickle, and wonders if they have wiggle room to negotiate. Marie is horrified, of course she would be, but the feds reluctantly work with Gene and Bill, dismissing a bunch of charges and eventually whittling his sentence down to a measly 7 years. 7 years is still a while. I mean, Entertainment Talk's been running for about just under 6.5, so you had another year and a half on top of that or so. So it's a long time still. Measly 7 years. Gene insists on picking his prison, a cushy one in North Carolina, only federal institution, with a golf program. If it's good enough for Bernie Madoff, a smug, Gene pushes his luck and asks for a pint of premium ice cream every day while he's inside, offering more intel on Howard's death in exchange. But the feds shut him down, telling him Kim already told them everything about Howard. Sounds like you and your ex aren't talking on a regular basis. And Gene, for now, is left stunned. Again, what I think is interesting about these sort of monologue type things from Gene, because he does some of them later as well, is, okay, obviously he's using these to try to get his way, and he's doing that in this one, because there's another one he does in the courtroom later. And I suppose the interesting part as us as the audience is, like, what do we buy in terms of what he's saying? How much do we believe that he's sort of, like, struggling with events of the past? and where does that kind of all, you know, line up? Because it's again, it's like going back to the scene with the security guard where he's saying about he's got nobody and he's got nothing. Because in that scene, which you can compare to this one, he's everything he's saying is true about him not having anybody and no kids and no wife and everything. You know, his brother's dead and stuff like that. But how much does he? And obviously, he tries to do more of a subversion of the story so that he can, you know, try to get his way. And this is again where the brilliance of these shows is getting into the sort of grey area of these characters. And as you're watching, and again, it's all in the acting of Bob and everybody else's sort of like reactions to him, is like the grey area of, okay, where sort of, because you got so many different versions of Jimmy, which is interesting, of like, where do these fit into what? And there is a amount of trauma there for him, because obviously after Chuck's death and Kim walking out on him and Howard dying, bad things have happened to him. It's just, how do you truly feel about it, given that you've still got that slipping Jimmy persona in you? Which I think in this episode, from the phone call with Bill, that's where he slips back into, from Gene into Sol for almost mm-hmm. the rest of the episode, right up until round about the court case, possibly, around that area, which we can discuss later. But yeah, what do you think of all of this, David?
Yeah, I mean, this is, the monologue is great, and like all good lies, it's a half-truth, you know, because mm-hmm. we know that they did do that. They did take him out to the desert. They yep. did hold the gun to his head. His reasoning for them, him using that as then his reasoning for the reason for why he went ahead with everything, then that part is the lie. You know, I don't think we're supposed to believe that he did this out of fear. That's, you know, we know that he didn't. We know that he was a willing accomplice in all of it. He did it because it was money, and yeah. you know, which is what the mm-hmm. opening scene sort of reinforces, is he's doing this for the money. And it's the way that he comes out with all this, and it's sort of acted and emotional, and the guy turns and says, "Do you expect us to buy that?" And he's like, "I only need," or "Do you expect a jury to buy that?" And he's like, "I only need one." And you can tell that, I mean, they know he's lying at that point, but he's already set the guy up by saying, you know, I hear you've got an impressive record. You never lost a case. And you know, and he's putting forward his argument for, like, well, you've never lost a case. He's basically saying, well, you're on a 50-50 with this could tip it over, because I'm pretty sure I can convince at least one juror not to convict me. Mm. And if we do that, I walk free.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a pretty convincing argument, and it's so well done, and it's very Sol. The pushing for the ice cream thing, the ice cream is also a callback. Because there's an episode. Remember, it's, I think it was, the episode was 50% off, where the ice cream falls on the floor.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it was the same ice cream, you know. Mm. So there's lots of little callbacks throughout the whole episode. So that's, you know, but and also even the fact that Kim had already turned herself in. That relates back to the phone call, because that phone call, one of the things that he says in anger to her, when she says turn yourself into him, he basically says he says to her, you first, which she did. And so I think there is a certain amount of guilt of him, even though maybe she would have done it anyway, but I think there's a certain amount on his part of him going, I told her to do that. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, certainly. So we get another flashback, this time to Sol and Walter White, around the time of Breaking Bad, Granite State, while they're waiting to be extracted by Ed. Sol presents the time machine question to Walt this time, and he dismisses it as scientifically impossible. If you want to ask me about regrets, just ask about regrets. He's quite angry at this point, Walter, with Sol. Walt tells him about grey matter, blaming his friends for artificially manoeuvring me into leaving my own creation. That was Gretchen and Elliot, wasn't it?
Yes. So,
and lamenting how rich he could have been if it stayed. Sol says he'd go back to when he was 22 and pulled a slip and fall outside a department store and really hurt himself. My knee's never been the same since. Walter chuckles to himself and says, "So you were always like this," which again is a very important line, I think. Kind of saying about, like, I think the overall message from this episode towards Sol is there was always the slipping Jimmy part of you in there. You just, you know, had to get to it in a certain way. You kind of came out of it at a certain point with Jean, with the more relaxed Cinnabon life. And him just not really wanting, like, anything else. Like, Walter is thinking of a time where something genuinely quite bad happened to him, and sort of obviously a lot of bad things happened to Walter White, but about, like, him being screwed over by his friends, and he'd try and go back and fix that. But I mean, I suppose here Sol's answer isn't about money, but it's not like it's sort of like, and then what you're supposed to get from both of those answers is, like, there's nothing he'd sort of, because he doesn't, like, with both answers he doesn't really mention, like, oh, I go back and see this person or help this person or see a family member or anything like that. Because to him it's kind of, you know, aside from Kim and maybe a few others, like obviously we get some stuff later with Chuck, in the points in time where he asks both questions, or has both these conversations, he's just not really thinking about anything else. So again, it's a great way to describe that. And again, good to see Bryan Cranston, of course, again. That's always a nice treat. But yeah, the whole, like, you know, filling with the pipe in this scene, and Walter getting increasingly more frustrated with him, and then their back and forth, I thought this was really great. This is really nice. What did you think?
Yeah, it is. The scene is about the fact that, I mean, if you think Jimmy at this point in the story, in his life, you know, Howard dead, they, you know, because this all happened before Breaking Bad, so the death of Howard, which led to Kim leaving him, the way he screwed over Chuck, all those things that has happened, and there are no regrets for any of it. And the regret he comes up with was something which he basically did to himself, which was he was trying to scam somebody, fell over and damaged his knee. I mean, it's selfish, it's self-centered. And it was whilst he was trying to scam somebody as well. And you know, Walt's like, yeah, so you've always been like this. So, I mean that again. So it's showing this sort of personality has always been there. The fact that he's only interested in money, he only really cares about himself. Mm-hmm. That's really what these scenes are sort of showing. Whereas both Mike and Walt have both got genuine regrets. I mean, Walt's regret is partly about the fact that he got screwed over by his friends, but also had he still been part of that company, which was incredibly successful, none of this would have happened.
Had he
still been part of it, you know, it would have been his business, he would have been incredibly wealthy, and the medical bills would never have been an issue, and there would have been a load of money to leave to his family had he died from that cancer.
But we never would have got Breaking Bad. So.
We never would have got Breaking Bad, but that's always the thing. I mean, we've said before, if this happened in pretty much any other country other than America, Breaking Bad wouldn't have happened, because everywhere else doesn't have that healthcare system. So,
I suppose America did something good getting the concept of the show. Yeah.
Yes. So, but the whole scene, the way it's such a Walt thing as well, like the conversation just made me laugh, because he's asking about the time machine, which is a perfectly innocent sort of fun question, and Walt's getting really annoyed by the fact that, you know, well, you want to ask me regrets, ask me about regrets, you know, that, and going off on the fact that the time travel is like, you know, breaks the laws of physics and you can't do it. It's such a wonderfully Walt moment.
Yeah,
that I absolutely love that. And I mean, I love Walter White as a character, not just for the Heisenberg stuff, but I love Walter's pettiness at that sort of stuff. He's just wonderful. So it was great that they used that back in there.
So I mean
it's just a really nice scene. And you know, whilst we didn't get any Jesse this episode, we did get him the episode before. It was nice seeing again, you know, you've got these two characters together in this scene who are both characters that, you know, end up one dead, one banged up. And just sort of interesting that the two characters that we got meeting in the last episode were Jesse and Kim, who are the two that got away as well. Yeah. You know, I thought this, and the whole thing about fixing the water heater was a very Walt thing. And there was an episode previously where that had been a thing, I seem to remember as well, with the water heater. It was one of the episodes of Breaking Bad where that had been a thing. So, there's just great things in here.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. On the plane back to Albuquerque, Gene asks Bill what will happen to Kim now. The DA probably won't file charges, Bill says, but she is facing civil litigation from Howard's widow, Cheryl, who is out lawyer shopping as we speak. Gene then offers to tell the feds even more about Howard than Kim did, even though Bill warns him it could endanger Kim's civil case. But Gene counters that by saying, it's really good ice cream. Kim is volunteering at a free legal service firm in Florida, where she gets a call from Suzanne Erickson, who lets her know Saul was arrested and is being extradited to New Mexico. He's giving a testimony that affects you personally. This is where I started to get worried in the episode, because I was very worried about, this is Saul on a more kind of extreme level, because the one person at this point you don't think that he'll intentionally do anything bad to is Kim, and the hint there of like the smug sort of smile, and he sort of says, oh, it's really good ice cream, sits down and is just like really relaxed, and you're just worried at the time of like, are you gonna throw Kim under the bus? And that's where I was like, oh no, I don't like, again, in terms of story sense, like I was like, I don't like where this is going. Kind of thing. So I was quite worried. It's interesting because in the last episode you got the Marion attack with him as Gene, and we're sort of scared of the guy, and then this episode it's like, it's not the same thing. He's not threatening to attack him, but he's threatening to sort of like, you know, put her in a bad legal situation, and you switch from being sort of genuinely scared to being just sort of worried about someone's situation. So I thought this was really good. But yeah, this is the point in the episode where I was like, oh no, there's, and I checked the timer because I was scared for the episode. And I was like, oh no, I don't want this to go this way. So yeah, this is proper full on like bad soul stuff. And even the way that the federal agent's looking at him and Bill's looking at him of like, really? Kind of thing. Is like, okay, if those people are doing it, and as the camera's panning away as well, you see the officer there, and he's giving this look of like, my gosh, this guy kind of thing.
Yeah.
And when someone like that is doing that, because usually these officers, they don't have like emotional attachment to the person. They're just there to sort of arrest them and do their job. So it's very just sort of monotone and sort of mundane. But when, I suppose, I don't know if you call them client, when a prisoner like that does something and even the officers have a reaction like that, you think, okay, this is like something different. So what did you think of this scene?
Yeah, I had the same thing to you. It was like, where's he going with this? Because it was really difficult for me to believe that he was going to throw Kim under the bus. There's given that, you know, the previous scene where before the flashback where he just found out that she was basically had gone and confessed everything, you do think, is he really gonna put her in a position where she could get like criminally charged with something? Or so I was a little bit concerned where you're going this, but I did also kind of think, surely he's doing this for some sort of scam. He's gonna take full responsibility for everything and try and claim that she was lying and had nothing to do with it, or I don't know. So I was kind of edging on the side of, I don't like where this is going, but there must be some, he must be doing this to try and get Kim off, surely, whatever it is, or, you know, try and get Kim out of some form of trouble. The other little interesting thing about the plane, of course, was the fact that Fair Airlines, which is the same thing, plane airline that crashed, during the Breaking Bad episodes as well. I don't know if you caught that.
It's what, sorry?
The airline, these is Wayfarer. It's Wayfarer, the flight, mm-hmm. which is the same flights that were the plane that crashed in the Breaking Bad episode as well. So that's the sort of, it's the same airline that they used for that.
Hmm. Wonder if there's a Teddy on this plane.
Yes, maybe. But yeah, so I kind of guess that he was probably working on something to try and get her off rather than throw her under the bus. But yeah,
that's the thing, it was hard to tell, and that's what makes it so interesting. And again, so much there's so much facial acting, I think that's the way to describe it, in this episode. Mm-hmm. And again, if you if you focus on Bob in this scene, and like, it, the look that gets, the part that just gets me about this is, like, he says, oh, the ice cream's really good, sits down and gives some, like, facial expressions, and that's where, like, that's that moment, isn't it?
So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so Kim sets up to do some volunteering at the thing. There's not a ton that sort of happens there, but she gets a call that lets her know about what's basically going on. Mm-hmm. So... but good to see Kim again, because it's always good to see Kim and Rhea Seehorn. Yeah. I hope that she wins an Emmy for this when it happens. So Kim is there watching in the courtroom when it says Gene sold Jimmy. He's a bunch of different personalities in this part. Shows up for his hearing wearing a shiny Saul Goodman suit. That suit. It made you think, like... Yeah, it gave you a particular feeling, didn't it? Him mm-hmm. sort of wearing that suit of, like, I'm the kind of the big guy. I'm the, you know, the winner sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It's got that very much about it. And quietly telling himself it's showtime. Marie and Gomez's widow Blanca are there too. The judge questions why the feds are offering him such a generous sentence, and Gene offers to clear things up, launching at first into the sub story we heard earlier about how scared he was of Walt, but not for long. That night, I saw an opportunity. He changes course, he tweaks the story, let's say. Admitting he helped Walt build his drug empire, the judge warns him he's contradicting his testimony and swears him under oath. Gene says he lied about Kim's involvement because I wanted her to come here today. I wanted her to see this. He confesses that he was more than a willing participant in Walt's crimes. I was indispensable. Walt could have been soon dead or in prison without him, so without Saul. He claims, and Hank and Gomez would still be alive. Walter White couldn't have done it without me. Again, it's the same stuff from earlier of, like, everything you're saying is more true in this scene.
Yeah.
Of, like, he loved getting involved. He loved working with Heisenberg because, again, there was money involved and an opportunity, and he was big, you know, big old, you know, criminal lawyer Saul Goodman, and people liked him and people came to him. What he's also saying here is kind of true as well. I mean, sure, Walter and Heisenberg, not Walter and Heisenberg, Jesse and Walt could have gotten a different criminal lawyer, maybe, but it might not have been successful as Saul. So yeah, again, if you got to look at sort of like, okay, if Mike hadn't come into the picture, if Saul hadn't come into the picture, if these other characters hadn't come into the picture, things just wouldn't have kind of gone the same. It's interesting if you look through Breaking Bad's timeline, I suppose, and you think, okay, if you take out this character or that character in these scenarios, things go very, very different. Of course, the thing that kicks it all off is Walter getting cancer in the first place, because obviously if he didn't, have that, then none of this would happen. But he probably is right about, like, if they didn't have me, they would have failed their operation, because they got to a point where they needed a lawyer, but specifically a criminal lawyer. Again, that kind of thing popping up. And again, it's that part of, like, because he looks back at Kim a bunch of times here as well. There's another section to this in a second, but it's like, okay, what you're saying is true, but how do you actually feel about it? And you, as the audience, trying to read, again, facial expressions, acting, the way he's saying things, and how Bob is portraying all this. While this is happening, obviously Kim is just sitting, sort of watching at the back. So, yeah, this was brilliant. It leads on to another bit later on, or in a minute. But what did you think of the start of all this?
Yeah, this is... It's good that, you know, you've got... He appears to come in like Sol. You know, the It's Showtime thing, again, is another callback to a previous episode. You've got the widows there. You've got the judge quite rightly questioning, right? Like, you know, he's got this huge rap sheet and he's only got 7.5 years. Why? 7.5 years, of course, being the length of time that the show's been on as well. Which I thought was a nice little touch.
Because it got like a year delay and stuff, didn't it, as well?
Yeah. So I like the way he starts off the sob story, and you can see the anger in Marie's face of like, oh, he's going to try this. And then he changes tack and, you know, just confesses everything. But does it in a kind of soul way of still having the bravado of going, yeah, this never would have happened without me. It was all me, you know, it was all me and Walter. Walter did the cooking, but he couldn't have got away with it unless I was there. Which I think arguably, I mean, as you say, is probably true. I mean, they could have got another lawyer, but I don't think there was anybody that was as uniquely connected as Sol was at the time. Mm-hmm. So, and they might have been small-time drug dealers, but they would never have built the empire that they did without Sol. So I think all of that is, you know, very much true, I would have thought.
Definitely. So anyway, this continues. He looks behind him and locks eyes with Kim before continuing. What happened to Howard Hamlin? It was, I can't even. He gets choked up as he credits Kim for starting her life over. I'm the one who ran away. Then he brings up his brother Chuck. As the courtroom's exit sign buzzes overhead, that's a little sort of like battery callback thing, I think, to him. So
yes.
Calling him the most brilliant lawyer I ever met, and berating himself for trying harder to help him. Instead, when I saw a chance to hurt him, I took it. He blames himself for taking away the one thing he lived for, the law. After that, he killed himself. We're talking about Chuck here, of course. He adds, sadly, and I'll live with that. Before taking a seat again, Bill tries to tell him what happened with Chuck wasn't even a crime, but Gene disagrees. Yeah, it was. And Gene/Sol tells them he wants to be called Jimmy McGill. He sort of changes his name like halfway through the thing, but whatever. He turns back to look at Kim again while the lawyer argues over reimposing the maximum sentence on him. And later we'll find out the conclusion of this. Is it odd for me to say that? Because like Kim doesn't say anything in this scene, right? She's observing, she's watching, but from the foot tapping or the heel tapping, whatever you want to call it, to just her expressions and things like that. I mean, sure, Rhea Seehorn here doesn't have to do as much as she's done in more exaggerated scenes, like when she's giving, you know, dialogue and things like that. But just still kind of looked at her and thought, like, I don't know. It's this episode does quite heavily rely on sort of facial expressions and the expressions that they're giving to each other, like when he's looking around at her and they're locking eyes and there's no words exchanged. It's just all about looks, and you can sort of feel like the history almost between them, and it's sort of like you're thinking about their past, present, and future, and like where is this going, and that type of stuff. There's a lot that you can kind of potentially sort of read from that. Again, it's all done in like facial acting and that sort of stuff, which is brilliant. But again, this was a great sort of conclusion to this courtroom thing. I liked the buzzing thing, the callback to Chuck, that was kind of cool, which makes sense because we're about to see Chuck in a second, in a flashback scene. And they didn't do that. They sort of muffled a little bit his speech because they've had a few times over the last couple of episodes, like characters on the phone, and then you cut like the camera away from them, you mute them, and you either cover the noise with something else or whatever. But this was not quite that. So yeah, it was a good conclusion to the courtroom stuff here, I thought. What did you think of this scene?
Yeah, this was great. And what was hilarious as well was the second that he sort of starts to change his story and goes, you know, in the sort of earlier bit as well, the this whole scene, you know, when he starts to change his story, the second he kind of starts to do that and they start to swear him in, the fact that the Bill kind of immediately goes to the council and the judges sort of going, not a chance in hell, which is just hilarious, the sort of the way he tries to sort of sneak out and like, no, I don't want to, you know, because the entire reason he took this case was because it's, you know, he talks about it being a casemaker, and had he got 7 years for it, it would have been, but you know, then he gets up and confesses everything. And this is sort of comes back to the conversations that he's had, the flashbacks that we've seen about it all being about the money and about regret. And then he sees, you know, he's engineered this situation to get Kim in the courtroom, you know, and he's, you're seeing the reason he's doing this is because of his love for Kim and, you know, that history. And he wants to unburden himself of all this and come clean and be Jimmy. And you can see, he says here, he does have a regret, particularly over Chuck. And it's, yeah, this is where you see the sort of, you know, the Gene personality started to go, the Soul personality started to go, and he has, for all his faults, gone back to being Jimmy. And I mean, Jimmy, as we've established, has always been these people. You know, he's always been a little bit Sol. He's always been a little bit Gene. He's always been Jimmy. And this is sort of seems to be him realizing that and trying to go back to being that person. So, yeah, I really like this. And the different direction it goes, and, you know, him confessing about the stuff with Chuck, which, I mean, doesn't even have anything to do with the case. It's literally him just unburdening himself about all the things he feels guilty about. So yeah, and of course the opposing side arguing that he should actually get the maximum sentence again, which, you know, is probably given that he's basically, you know, just completely changed his tune. Of course, that's what they're going to say.
Yeah. Speaking of Chuck, we get our third flashback to him and Jimmy around the time of the series premiere, with Jimmy bringing his brother groceries and telling him about his small-time clients. Chuck tells him, if you don't like where you're heading, there's no shame in going back and changing your path. And then Jimmy, I guess we'll call him Jimmy at this point, walks off. But then Chuck, he clutches a copy of H.G. Wells's The Time Machine, and he walks off to go to bed. It says they go to bed, but he walks off. So yeah, I like in this episode again how you're touching on Walt and Mike and Marie, and you've obviously got Kim still here, you obviously still got Jimmy, you're touching upon Chuck again, because I think doing something like a flashback with Howard wouldn't have made as much sense. Like, we haven't seen Chuck for a while. Chuck gets mentioned in literally the previous scene, and he's talking in the scene that we've just discussed about, like, his regrets with Chuck. So this is going back to a much happier time with them. And, you know, him, again, very important just lines in this episode about, like, if you don't like where you're heading, there's no shame in going back, changing your path. And this is obviously, you know, before everything went chaotic in Breaking Bad. Because this, again, is at a much simpler time. He's just, you know, a normal lawyer and that sort of stuff. But yeah, he goes down the path that he goes down, I suppose. I guess this same line could be put towards Chuck in a way of, like, if you don't like where you're heading, there's no shame in changing your path. Because Chuck himself doesn't go down a great path, like what he does, what he ends up doing to Jimmy. And again, there's a back and forth proposed here about, like, could Jimmy have helped Chuck more? I would argue that maybe he couldn't have, but then I suppose for Jimmy and him reflecting and everything, and we go back to scene with Chuck, he's reflecting upon that. Because I do think, because I mentioned a few episodes ago, like, you know, the status of some of these characters, and I said that Chuck ended up kind of being the villain of Jimmy. If you look at what, season 3, 4, roughly, around about that time frame, he kind of ended up being Jimmy's villain of the show. So I think some of this also leans on Chuck as well because of the choices that he makes. So I think you can apply that sort of, like, changing your path, which is the message here. I think it can apply to both. But yeah, it was good to one last time see them at a better point where they were, you know, better as brothers and that type of stuff. So yeah, what do you think of this flashback?
Yeah, it was. It's nice to see. It's Mike McLean, isn't it? I think the guy that plays Chuck, and nice to see him back in this. This generally, I mean, it actually seems to be a sort of prequel of a prequel because it's seems to be sort of a day or a few days before the very start of the episode, because the conversation about the Financial Times before the very start of the first episode of the season of the first season. Because the comment about the Financial Times, I think when he turns up in the first episode to go and visit Chuck, he's like, he has a copy of the Financial Times with him. And in this, he has this conversation about, oh, the newsstand, he's talking about stocking the Financial Times again. So, yeah, this seems to be sort of literally a prequel to a prequel, like this little snippet. So yeah, this was sort of really nice, and you know, it is nice to see that character, just them chatting, that relationship. And I know what you mean about the fact that Chuck sort of became the villain, and Jimmy, neither of them handled that particularly great relationship. But that thing about if you don't like where you're heading, there's no shame in going back and changing your path is, you know, this is again, it's about regret. It's about, like, you know, but it's in this case, it's sort of saying, you know, stop before you get there. And if you can see you're going the wrong way, go and change. And the H.G. Wells time machine is a nice touch as well. Because, you know, of course, that goes back to the time machine conversation. I think that copy of the time machine was on Jimmy's nightstand in an earlier episode in season 6 as well. So that book has shown up before. So, yeah.
So many details.
Yeah, so many little bits and pieces. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Back in the present, Jimmy, and then it says here, let's just call him Jimmy. Let's just do that. Rides a prison bus on his way to the subpar facility he tried to negotiate his way out of. The one dubbed the Alcatraz of the Rockies. One of the other prisoners recognizes him as Saul Goodman. That was bound to happen, I suppose, because these are the criminals, aren't they? And though he tries to tell him his name is, he denies it, says, no, I'm just McGill. Word spreads fast, and soon the whole bus full of prisoners is chanting, Better Call Saul. Jimmy allows himself a little smile at this particular moment. Yeah, it's just a little moment that builds up to the final prison scene. Again, interesting in terms of, like, when you first get to this scene, and it's him kind of, he's just sitting there, he's kind of not maybe accepted it, but he's like, okay, this is what it is, maybe. And then I don't know if it's, you could say the ego part is back, but the sort of, like, him being recognized and him, you know, he loved being Saul Goodman and everything, and he tries to deny it at the start again. There's a interesting kind of change there of, at first he's not lapping it up or anything, he's trying to just, like, no, let's just get, I think what's on his mind is, let's just kind of get there, maybe, possibly, and again, you can maybe read different things from, again, facial expressions or whatever, or the way he's speaking to this guy. But of course, the word spreads, and you know, he doesn't sort of get up and chant with them or whatever, he just sort of sits there and smiles. So it's more of a subdued kind of thing, where he's like embracing it in a way, and you see in a later scene he's like fist bumping people and, you know, Because, I mean, they say about, like, you know, if you've got a policeman or a cop or whatever that goes to prison, like, you're in a bad situation because you've possibly put away some of these people. So you're in a dangerous situation. But my guess is if you're a lawyer and you get sent to prison, some of those prisoners might want to try to use you because of that, or they might like the fact that you're a lawyer, possibly. I mean, it's better, probably better in a, I mean, I don't know, I've never been to prison or whatever, but probably better to be a lawyer than it is to be like a cop or something. So, you know, just because of what those roles kind of offer you. But yeah, I think the way I would describe this is like a subdued kind of, I might do something with this, but I'm gonna like stay a bit more relaxed. That's where I sort of said subdued. But what did you make of the chanting and everything here?
To me, it's Jimmy. I think at this point, you know, post the him facing court, he is Jimmy, and this is starting to sort of present the fact that yes, he is Jimmy. He is also Sol, and Jimmy and Sol are kind of and always have been the same person. One is maybe a slightly more extreme version of it, but that has always been in there. You know, they are really have always been Sol. Throughout, so even though he tries to call himself McGill, and when he's on the bus and they are chanting "Better Call Saul, Better Call Saul," he's like, okay, fine, you know. And to the point of being a lawyer in prison, certainly if you're a prosecution lawyer, you'd be in trouble. As a defense attorney, not so much, because you're the ones that are defending these people, you know. So you're on their side, as far as they're concerned. So you're in a, despite the fact that the prison that he's been sent to is the one that he specifically said he didn't want to go to because he said it was a hole. But the even then, it's the guys in there, they know who he is and they have respect for him because of the fact that he helped them. You know, he was there for a lot of them, and he, no, maybe not them specifically, but certainly people in their position. So he should be relatively safe in there. And I think there is a part of him that sort of is realizing that as well. But I think this is really him coming to terms with the fact that, you know, yes, he created this persona, but it is also part of Jimmy. And, you know, what the episode's been saying all along is, he's always been like this. This has always been here. So, despite the fact that he has got this Saul Goodman persona, it is just part of Jimmy McGill. And he's always been Jimmy, you know. So.
But that's that scene. Then on to the last paragraph. In prison, he's baking bread just like his old Cinnabon days, and a guard tells him his lawyer is here to see him. Jimmy goes to the interview room to find Kim. Her New Mexico barcode doesn't expire, apparently. I don't know anything about that, but apparently it
That's
doesn't
that with
expire.
the yes, the New Mexico bar card is the New Mexico bar is the legal thing that they have, because remember she gave up her license to practice, which what she's saying is there's no expiry date on the legal card that says I am a lawyer, essentially. So she's just used her old card to be able to get in. That's what she means.
Cool. She gets the guard to uncuff him, and she and Jimmy share a cigarette and lean against the wall together, just like the classic good old days. Just like they did back in the good old HHM days. You had them down to 7 years, she says with admiration. And after his confession, now he's been sentenced to 86. But with good behavior, who knows? He says with a smile, because of course he'd smile at something like that. As Kim leaves the prison, Jimmy watches through the chain link fence from the inmates' basketball court. They're playing basketball in the background, and he shoots his classic gun fingers at her. She doesn't do the same thing. And she walks off. We get a panning shot of the wall that kind of separates them slightly, and that's the end. That's the last. Because you always kind of, I always kind of wonder with series finales, right? Like, okay, you've got your story that you're going to conclude, in whatever way you're going to do that. And I'm not talking about for a cancelled show. I'm talking about a show that's actually ordered a last season, and it's intended to be the final season, like this one is. But what is going to be what is going to be your last shot? What have you chosen to sort of like, hey, we're going to have this as our last scene, but where is your camera going to cut off? What are you going to be looking at when those credits? Because when those credits come up, it dawns on you that, like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what are you going to leave as, like, that impression? So that was an interesting choice for that. One thing I didn't think I'd be interested in, but was with this scene, there's a shot of the two of them, because I'm not really like a visuals person, I've said this loads of times, but there's certain things that do work in a storytelling aspect as opposed to just, hey, this looks pretty. Because there's a way that you can do like visual storytelling that is interesting to me, which this show has done with different things. But the shot of like, because it sort of panned slightly more to the left at one point, and they play this like quiet little music, and I was thinking to myself, like, this is very noir almost. Because this is after he gets his cigarette lit, and they sort of lean against the wall. The camera sort of changes position. There's this little bit of music that plays. I suppose, you know, when you've got like, because a classic noir kind of thing like this is a character smoking a cigarette, and it's black and white, and you've got noir music playing. Like, that's your classic kind of noir style of things, which was a nice kind of touch. So yeah, the only thing, again, this was a me problem. The only thing that, because she says, oh, you managed to get down to 7, and then she just says 86, so I should have put 2 and 2 together.
Yeah.
And I didn't, so I kind of looked around a little bit online. I was like, wait, what does that mean, sort of thing. And you know that she obviously walks off and stuff, but yeah, no worries with that part. But yeah, this is a good way to end it. I'm glad that they had, you know, Jimmy and Kim, who have been the kind of the two main characters really of this show anyway. You've had other big characters, obviously, like Gus and Lalo and Nacho and, you know, Howard and other characters, but this was really like Jimmy and Kim the whole way through, really. Their relationship changes throughout the show and that kind of stuff. So I really like this as the last scene. Again, it's a very, you know, the way the conversation flows is really good, and the dialogue and the acting and everything's just sort of top notch here. So yeah, a great end to the show. What did you think of the last scene?
Yeah, the thing with them leaning against the wall, smoking the cigarette, and the music going on in the background, that is actually a direct callback to one of the first scenes in the very first episode.
Yeah.
And
I saw a photo posted of that.
Yeah, there's and the even the music playing in the background is the same music that they used on the original episode. So that was a very deliberate callback to the very first episode. But it is a sort of interesting thing about sort of why he chose to go down that route. You know, the reason that he made up the stuff about Kim is because he wanted her to be there to hear that confession. Yeah. And, you know, so because she, in that phone call, she is the one that says, you know, go and turn yourself in and confess everything. So, and then he goes, you first. She actually does it. And now he has actually done it, you know, rather than sort of making up this story and trying to get out and only getting 7 years, he fully confesses and gets 86. And it's a sort of interesting thing of, does he want to live 7 years as Sol, or what would he rather have, 87 years or 86 years, yes, locked in prison, but as Jimmy, as his true self. And that's sort of that's the decision that he made, you know. I mean, because we don't know whether any of this congression did actually help Kim out of that civil case or not. Hopefully some of it did, but we don't know entirely for that. I think it's more about him just coming clean, which is what she wanted. And as we see in this scene, she admires him for that. She turns up to sort of, you know, talk to him, and we have that. And it looks like Jimmy's, because of the fact that, you know, they respect him as Sol, his life in prison is, despite the fact of where he is, and it's not the greatest prison, but
it could have been worse.
It could have been a lot worse. You know, he's with people that he is being helping. And the chances are, I mean, you know, you've got to imagine that with him in prison, he's basically become a prison lawyer, because...
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be coming to him for advice. They're going to be coming for him for how do I get out of this? How can I beat this rap? You know, I mean, I bet there is a lot of that stuff going on. You've got to imagine that his legal skills inside are going to be called upon by a lot of people. So there's, you know, he's not going to have that much of as much of a bad time as he would if certainly if he was a prosecution lawyer or a cop or something like that.
Mm.
So,
especially
you know,
a cop. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, I think. No, it's not the greatest life, but it could be. It could have been a lot worse for him. Absolutely.
I think it made sense what happened to both these people. I'm very, very glad that Kim has survived this series, and she gets to kind of walk free. She's still possibly got the thing with Cheryl going on, but the idea is that she kind of walks away, I suppose. But he, I think, what would have been a bit more too predictable is that they both just get off scot-free and that's just it,
yeah, and walked away. I don't think it would have made sense for them to walk away in the sunset into the sunset together.
No,
you know, and somehow got out
show.
Of it, and you know, equally him use just 7 years, you know, I don't think would have worked as well, because the entire point of this, I think, is there is a sort of actions have consequences point to a show like this, and him getting away with it. I mean, arguably Jesse got away with way more, you know, and got away scot-free. I mean, he had to leave everything behind, but he did get away, and maybe he shouldn't have been able to do that. But certainly with Saul, with everything that he's done, you do kind of think that had he just got 7 years for everything and, you know, used his own skill to get out of it and screw everybody else and not be gone back to being his true self, which is Jimmy, that would have been an odd place to end it as him just still being Saul. So yeah. I think this rounds it really nicely. You know, and yes, he's locked up in prison basically for the rest of his life, but he is doing it on his own terms as Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So, yeah, a very good end to the series. Of course, we do have if there's any other points we think of or things we didn't quite go in depth on, we have the wrap-up podcast next week. Assuming you still want to do that next week?
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Sounds good. So let's get to the emails, the feedback, and that sort of stuff. We got two to get to this week. Of course, if you want to write in one last chance, we'll still be doing the Breaking Bad podcast. So if you want to writing about Breaking Bad related stuff, you can do it through that, I suppose, but you can write in to matthew@entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter eTalkUK, there's a contact page information in the show notes. There's also the email box on the website version of the episode and a clickable email name in your show notes. Beth writes in and says, my god, I've never been so conflicted with a character in my life. So many great Gene, Soul, Jimmy twists. I still don't know if I like him or what, but I loved it. I think that's the important part here, is there's a lot of, especially in this episode, especially with that plane scene, mm-hmm. you're kind of conflicted on, like, you want him to be okay, but you kind of want some sort of punishment. Then he tries to maybe kill Marion, and then he maybe throws Kim under the bus, so it's a bit twisty and turny. But because at a couple of different points I was sort of like, I'll be fine if, like, he gets sentenced to prison, but I don't really want him to die. But if he does, is that a bad thing? But you want Kim to be kind of more okay, because he kind of pulled her in, but then she kind of pulled him back in, and it's not messy and complicated, it's just kind of, it's complex, because again, the writing towards his characters is very, very complex and very deep. But I was feeling that same thing in this episode, because I was thinking, like, if you do throw Kim under the bus, that makes me dislike you as a character, and the show made you think it was going to do that. But again, it's not flip-flopping or anything like that, it's just the way that it played out was so, so good. I think one thing that really helped that was this triple personality thing of Gene, Jimmy, Soul, because you were trying to work out, like, which version of that is it going to be, and, like, how's that all going to kind of play out, and how's that going to affect Kim? But yeah, there was the turning point moment on that plane where you really wondered, like, what he was going to do, and mm-hmm. I think that's where part of that confliction comes in. And I think that kind of started last week with that first term, which was trying to potentially attack Marianne, but they're not doing it. But would he have done it if the things didn't play out the same way? So At the end of the day, like, I wasn't rooting for him as much as I was rooting for Kim. I wanted him to be okay, but that's why I think it's ended so well, because there is a level of punishment to what he has done and what he potentially was going to do and what he, you know, how he kind of messed things up. But he's not dead. He's just got the punishment of prison, so he's okay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then Kim's the one who gets to kind of walk away, which makes more sense to me. So, yeah, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I completely agree. The other thing is, I think he is where he wants to be, or feels he should be.
Kind
you
of,
know,
yeah.
But for everything he's done, he feels this is the appropriate punishment. You know, yes, he should be locked up. He kind of actively made the choice to put himself where he is. You know, that was the path that he eventually chose. He chose to confess. He could have left it alone and just taken 7 years, but he chose to confess everything. He chose to become Jimmy in the end. Mm. And, you know, that comes with the baggage of being locked up for the rest of his life. But it's a genuine path, and it's one that he feels that he should be on. And fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it ended in the right place. I think it would have been, as I said, it would have been slightly weird had you ended with him sort of getting out in 7 years and then Kim meeting him outside and then riding off into the sunset. I think that yeah. would have been a weird
year flash forward, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been a strange way for it to
yeah,
go.
Yeah, that's not a Breaking Bad thing to do, is it? So
yeah, you know, I think with this, whilst it's not exactly, yeah, it's a very Breaking Bad sort of way of ending it, and I think, yeah, it feels right. I think, mm-hmm. you know, it feels like Jimmy ended in the right place. It, you know, he didn't end it as Saul. He ended it as Jimmy on his own terms.
Mm-hmm. And I think the reward is Kim getting set free.
Not necessarily Kim getting set free, because we don't know, but I think the reward is that Kim has her respect for him again. You know, right. I think regardless of whether she does still get sued or not, you know, she may still have legal troubles, but there is, it certainly muddies the water probably for that case, given whatever, you know, Jimmy's saying. But it does, I think the purpose of it was more about him just confessing, mm-hmm. and saying, okay, this is all the horrible stuff I've done. I deserve punishment for this.
Right.
And he gets it.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Last question, last part. Harrison says, a classic question, what's next for these actors and what's next for Peter and Vince? I think for most of these, a break, first of all, because they've worked very hard on this show. I don't mind, again, I kind of said half jokingly, like, you know, can Vince do zombie stuff? Because I would be curious about that. Or Vince and or Peter. They don't have to work on the same thing, of course. You can have the masterclass of both of them in separate places. They very much will be capable of handling that. I suppose the classic thing would be like, hey, what MCU or DC role could you hand to Bob or to Rhea? Not to say that they couldn't do that. That would be just a bit of a different ballpark. Because I don't think it would make sense for, like, I don't know, Bob Odenkirk to be like Superman or something. Or, yeah. You know. But they're both very, very good actors. I did see, I can't remember exactly what the details were. I'll look it up for next week. But I did see that Giancarlo and Bob are going to be in something else for AMC. But I'll look that up for next week. There was like a short little ad that played afterwards or something. So, and no, it's not got anything to do with their Better Call Saul characters. So, but I don't know. They're all very, very talented. I don't mind specifically what it is that they do. So we'll have to see, but give them some time. They've just worked on this big show. Hopefully they can go to the Emmys and win some stuff, and we'll see what happens after that. But yeah, we'll see what they decide to do. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure some of them might be taking a little bit of a break after this, but Bob Odenkirk has got, like you mentioned, a new show on AMC. It's called Straight Man. So
Interesting
there
name.
is, yes, there is that coming up, which looks like it's going to be quite interesting. So he's staying with AMC. There is a new show coming from Vince as well. He's got something in the works, although he hasn't been over elaborated on that, but there isn't anything solid about that. But I mean, that is coming. I'm not sure about Rhea, but there are various things in the works. I mean, these actors are not going to be out of work anytime soon.
No,
you know
no.
I don't know what, I'm not sure what Jonathan Banks has done. I think he didn't he have an Apple series or something coming up. I seem to remember. I'm just looking. Yeah, I mean, he pops up in various things anyway. I've not specifically heard of Rhea doing anything. She's got a thing called, there's a thing called Cooper's Bar, apparently. Looks like they're shorts. So I don't know. We'll have a look around. We'll wrap up policy next on the various cast members and where they're going and that sort of stuff for next week. But I mean, these people are not going to be out of work. I mean, they're multi, certainly award nominated, not necessarily all award winning, but they have all won various awards. But yes, give Rhea Seehorn an Emmy because she definitely deserves it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't see casting directors not looking at these people. So
no, absolutely.
Yeah, we shall see what pops up. Anyway, that's it for the moment. We'll be back next week where we can conclude things. Probably come back next week Thursday. It makes sense to do it exactly a week later. So we'll come back next Thursday if we can do that. In the meantime, let's wrap up for now. You can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org. TV, games, films, main night podcast. Take a look at what we've got. Entertainmenttalk.org and podcast platforms. If you want to support Entertainment Talk, that'd be great if you could do that. You can simply keep listening to more episodes that we've got on the places I've just mentioned. You can also tell other people, either by just simply telling them or using social media, however you want to do that. Patreon, if you want to support us over there, $5, $10 level tier for the every podcast and review options for that. So that's roughly how you can support Entertainment Talk. So those one of those different options. TV and film news, if you do want to know where Rhea and Bob and everybody else ends up next. Or whatever else happens with television and film, you know, TV renewals, cancellations, air updates, all that sort of stuff, air dates, updates, all that sort of thing. David, you run Geektown, don't you? What's going on with Geektown at the moment?
At the moment, we have some bits and pieces of news going up. There is some news about the exact launch time of Lord of the Rings. If you're waiting for that, that's one of the next new series. Prime Video took the extreme option of telling you exactly what time worldwide that show is going to drop because there's that much interest in it.
Everybody can go over there and break the servers.
So their servers will melt. I mean, they've not really thought that through, but because it's going to drop at exactly the same time. It will be 2 a.m. on Friday the 2nd of September for the UK, but we've got all the times for around the world on there. But they've announced the release schedule for that. There's some Superman and Lois news because they're recasting Jonathan Kent for reasons which are not entirely clear. There's a trailer for Wednesday up on the site as well, which is the new Tim Burton Addams Family series on Netflix. And there is, of course, Geektown Radio, where Daryl was on this week and he was talking about loads and loads of different movies. He did a review of Prey, the Predator film. He did a review of Bullet Train, Emily the Criminal, Moonfall as well. We talked about Star Trek Strange New Worlds. He talked about the latest season of Riverdale, which he watched, so you don't have to sit through it. And we also caught up on Slumman La Brea, and I reviewed a bit of Two Point Campus as well, which is a wonderful new building game. So, lots and lots of stuff on Geektown Radio. That's episode 352. You can find that on geektown.co.uk and all your favourite podcast places as well.
Excellent. So go and check out all that. I still need to finish this week's episode, so I'll do that in a minute. Let's go and check out all of that. You can find Bex as well streaming very regularly over on Twitch, TristaBYTES, Twitch, Twitter, Instagram. That's where you can find her doing her thing over there. Classic games, Tomb Raider, retro stuff, chat streams, all that good stuff as well. You can also find me streaming on Twitch, eTalkUK, for those. And if you missed the streams, the FIFA Career Mode episodes, or the game clips, you can find all of that archived on YouTube, Entertainment Talk Plays. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week for the wrap-up. Goodbye.
Bye.